Your Steve Jones Show podcast is loading now. The Steve Jones Show podcast is sponsored by Sunbury Motors, North 4th Street in Sunbury, and Sunbury Motors Kia, routes 11 and 15 in Hummel's Wharf. Sports talk where your voice counts. This is the Steve Jones Show on News Radio 1070 WKOK. Now, from the Sunbury Motors Studio, here's Steve Jones.
Sunbury Motors, 4th Street in Sunbury. Sunbury Motors, Kia, routes 11 and 15, Hummel's Wharf, online at sunburymotors.com. Ford Kia Hyundai, the best in new inventory, all with great warranties that mean so much. Great pre-owned inventory with the Sunbury Motors Guarantee. And a fabulous service department that backs it all up. Great technicians, pros all, that take care of everything simple to difficult. It's all at Sunbury Motors, 4th Street in Sunbury, Sunbury Motors, Kia, routes 11 and 15, Hummel's Wharf, and online, sunburymotors.com. Time now for our play-by-play call of the day.
Duncan Robinson looking for it. Caldwell Pope pokes it away. Butler hoists up a three. Off the mark. Brown the rebound. They've got a foul, and they do. The Heat will let it play out. It's over. At last, the long wait is over. After 47 years, the Denver Nuggets can finally call themselves NBA champions.
Mike Breen with the call on ABC last night with his usual brilliance. And now from brilliance to a darker world.
I like to call it from brilliance to stupidity. In that said game last night, and this was the bow, if you will, of the NBA needing to look at its officiating during the playoffs. Because what happened last night in the fourth quarter was unacceptable again, can happen, and should just show that the NBA needs to upgrade the officiating for the playoffs. That call on Aaron Gordon on Jimmy Butler, when he attempted that three, was about as bad as you can get, especially after there was a lengthy review. Butler, I don't understand what Aaron Gordon needs to do. Butler was the one that put his leg out. He literally couldn't do any more to get out of the way of Jimmy Butler trying to make that shot. And it's clear as day.
I agree completely. With one exception. I think the problem they ran into is they don't know who came up with the ball. That's why I think they led, and I'm guessing now. There's no replay that shows who ended up with the ball. He shot it up there, and and Jeff Van Gundy made a great point. He says, "Give us a wide shot here, will you, Tim?" He's talking about Tim Corrigan. He says, "So we can see who got the ball." And I think that was a big problem with that, was that, guess what? I don't think they know who came up with the ball.
Can't they do a jump ball maybe in that case? Instead of giving them two free throws?
They got three.
Or three, yeah. Three free throws, and they were critical at the time. He knocked every single one of them.
Yeah. It was a bad call, the wrong call. I mean, Gordon can't do anything else. I'm just wondering if, because there's no replay showing who ended up with the ball or whether it just went out of bounds or whatever, okay? And I'm wondering if that was part of the issue because they didn't know what to do with it after that. Because you notice they said stands is called. They didn't confirm it.
That's right. And I think that issue in itself just adds to the NBA needs to look at the way the officiating was performed during this entire playoff run here. There were multiple issues in every series and every round.
Well, last night, that was a physical game last night.
It was, yeah. That's what kept Miami in it early.
So.
And then the fact that it came down, and then you make that kind of call and that kind of moment goes back to what I just said before. You can't do it, especially when it was that physical, especially in the first half. And then you call that? I mean, come on.
Yeah, I don't know.
So the NBA needs to totally revamp the way they determine officials, I think, or at least look into revamping it or at least going over it this offseason, because there were too many issues in every round.
Yeah, I don't. That particular call, you know, they didn't get it right, but I'm just wondering if nobody knew who ended up with the ball. If, you know, if Denver had caught the ball or had it. But, yeah, it was not right. It was not right.
So that's one that I was angry about from last night.
We have a list.
We do.
Oh.
Now, since we got Lafitte come up, I can do one more, and then I can get to the other one last.
Oh, but, God, there's more.
Yes. Well, I know we got Lafitte, so I'll do one more for right now, and that's Torey Lovello last night between the D-backs and the Phillies. I mean, who does this guy think he is? Clearly, he went out there with an agenda. His team is down 5-1. He tried to get them going or something, and he comes out, and clearly when JT Realmuto is like, dude, we're not trying to hit anybody. I've been hit twice in the same game, and I didn't charge the mound or cause a fuss. It happens. That's baseball. Deal with it. You get a free pass to first base, and you obviously came back and won the game. Enough with the soapbox. I mean, the fact that he caused both benches to clear last night, completely absurd. Absolutely absurd. Get over it.
Yeah, I saw JT hit for the cycle.
Yes, it was a wild one last night. A game the Phillies should have won. Yeah.
Yeah, lost 9-8.
But Torey Lovello, get off your high horse. Stop it.
Adrian Amos, by the way, is going to the Jets.
Another former Packer.
Yeah.
Might as well call him the New York Packers pretty soon.
And Volpe is not going to Scranton. He's not going to Moosic.
Correct.
Yeah, I know, that's why I said it. We'll come back with Lafitte Pinkai in a moment here on News Radio 1070 WKOK.
There's something to be said about a sale with a handshake. A service technician who really knows what he's doing and can explain it in English what the problem is. There's nothing better than having that friend you could trust in the area. That's Sunbury Motors, where you get selection, knowledgeable salespeople, and prices that fit your budget, and more important, that friend you can trust. Welcome to Sunbury Motors, Kia, Ford, and Hyundai. You could shop other dealers and compare prices, but at Sunbury Motors, you get their lowest price promise. They research the current used vehicle market and guarantee their used car prices are the lowest. If you find a lower price, Sunbury Motors will beat it. Three dealers all in one. See their full new and pre-owned inventory at sunburymotors.com. Pick out a vehicle you like and schedule your test drive online. Follow them on Facebook. Sunbury Motors Ford and Hyundai, North 4th Street, Sunbury, and Sunbury Motors Kia, Routes 11 and 15 in Hummel's Wharf.
Alongside Jenna Antonucci. Jenna, 50 years after Secretariat makes history, you make history of your own. How do you describe the moment?
I don't know that we have words right now. I'm going to need a minute on all this, but Fiona, my assistant, Robert, her husband, who's been riding him, John Everett, his owner. I mean, I don't have words yet. We're trying to soak all this in and just so proud of the horse right now.
Yeah, Jenna Antonucci. First woman trainer to win the Belmont. And Diane Carpenter with King Post back in 88 had a second place finish. And Lafitte Pinkai joins us. Welcome back, sir. It's great to have you with us.
Thanks for having me. How are you?
I'm doing great. How did you look at the history-making event on Saturday? As the way it played out, because the great, great trainers there across the board, whether it's Pletcher, whether it's Baffert, but, you know, her horse ends up winning.
Inspiring. I found it really inspiring. And in this game in which you seem to have a monopoly with so many of the top horses by a handful of trainers, and understandably so, when you have the Todd Touchers and the Bob Baffert and the Brad Cox and Steve Asmussen, they are the best at what they do. They're going to be able to maximize these horses' potentials. If you're a horse owner, you want your horse in their hands, but that doesn't mean they're the only ones who can train horses to compete at the highest level, as we learned over the course of the weekend. And just a story that the mainstream that may only pay attention to three horse races a year has really gravitated towards and setting the table for a really exciting summer at Saratoga, where I'm assuming we will have a chance to see the Belmont Stakes winner, hopefully in the Jim Danny and eventually the Travers.
Which would be, and the meet at Saratoga is always phenomenal. As Red Smith said, you don't feel like you're in New York, we're in Saratoga. And he's right about that. Javier Castellano rode Arcangelo, which was in the middle of, it broke from three, but it was in the middle of the betting pack at 8-1 at one point. What kind of job did Castellano do aboard?
It's an amazing story. Here's a guy who's in the Hall of Fame, and he's won so many of the biggest races in the country, and yet he was a combined, what, like 0-29 or whatever it was in the Kentucky Derby and the Belmont, and then bang, he wins the Derby with Mage, and then finally gets that first Belmont Stakes win in his 15th try in his backyard. He's been in New York so many times. Jenna had said something to Maggie during the course of the broadcast about, you know, if horses can communicate, what is Arcangelo saying before the Belmont? And she told Maggie, he's saying, get out of my way. And at the top of the stretch with National Treasure in front of him, he says, get out of my way. And he's able to find that crease along the inside. Javier Castellano may have deked Johnny Velasquez a little bit. I'm not sure Velasquez knew Castellano was there right on his heels, kind of creeping in behind. For Castellano, I thought the difference in the race was saving that ground while you watch the rest of the field, you know, losing ground, trying to gather their momentum, but towards the outside. Forte, the champion and runner-up in the eventual second place finish, it took a long time for him to find his best ride. Castellano saving the real estate on the inside, and then Arcangelo showed some acceleration, and he created that cushion, and that separation he was able to create between he and the closers, I think proved to be the difference in the end. Masterful ride.
Yeah, and let's face it, Johnny V is one of the best in the business, who was aboard National Treasure and, of course, won the Preakness this time through. Where do you look at it? The sport ended up with three different winners of the three Triple Crown races, but it's been the off-the-track stuff that has happened at Santa Anita, Churchill Downs, and now at Belmont. Where do you see the state of the sport today, Lafitte?
It's a heightened level of scrutiny in that what may have been acceptable in the past is no longer acceptable. And the sport is doing everything it possibly can with HISA now in place, and where you're seeing a consistent national, consistent rules in terms of medications that need to be followed. One of the biggest issues over the years has been just a lack of awareness or understanding from jurisdiction to jurisdiction about, okay, well, this is legal over here, this medication is legal in this state, but this many hours before the race, or to this amount of that particular medication. There was so much confusion, and it just doesn't make sense. You can't have, you know, from state to state, whether you're driving on a freeway, and I'm in California, and I can go 55 here, but in the next state over in Nevada, if the speed limit was 35, and I didn't know that, and I'm doing 60 now, I'm in the can for reckless driving. There's been so much lack of understanding, and now I think that there is federal oversight. It's going to be perhaps a clumsy process at first, trying to get everyone on the same page, but you're seeing steps being taken in order for the horses and the jockeys to make things as safe as possible. You're never getting to zero. There are going to be injuries. There are going to be catastrophic injuries. That's going to happen, but you're never going to get to zero. But the statistics are out, and they will show you right now, specifically right here in California right now, statistics that racing has never been safer. That doesn't make it okay. It's never going to be okay to see a horse fall down. It's never going to be okay to see a horse expire on the racetrack. But as somebody who is in the sport, am I biased? Yeah, probably. Having said that, I've never felt better about the steps that are being taken in the right direction to make things as safe as possible, understanding still there are going to be accidents.
Well, but people have to realize there are hundreds of races a day across the country. And I realize that, yes, something tragic happens. That really, I mean, it's dramatic and it hurts. But I think it's important, the point you made, Lafitte, that, look, it's never been safer, because I think people have to realize how many races are actually run in a day across the country.
Yeah, and that's not conjecture. But the stats bear out in terms of what you're seeing today versus 5 years ago, 10 years ago, and there are still measures being taken. There's still conversations about whether or not a shift is embedded track. Now, I don't know that that's the right answer necessarily, but the point that it's a conversation, that extreme measures are being taken in order to make this. Because we realize that if you continue down the same path, eventually, you know, there's going to be a steep price to pay as far as the sport continuing. There are those out there that would like to see the end of racing, that call for the end of racing, that because of horses, tragically, that you lose from time to time. But as I just mentioned, between with the federal oversight, with HISA being involved, and the steps that are now being taken, I am confident that we're headed in the right direction. But at the same time, it's hard to make that case for someone who maybe has never been to the racetrack before, and they're there and they're having a good time and they're having a lot of fun and they've seen a few races, and then watch an accident and see a horse go down. And sadly, if it happens to me, a catastrophic breakdown. This conversation, it rings hollow. I get that. It's never, I don't care how many times I've seen it. It's jarring. And it's unfortunately a situation that, yeah, you're never going to get to zero, but we are moving in the right direction.
Obviously, Dick Girardi's my basketball broadcast partner, so we talk a lot of racing.
Huh? He's the best.
Isn't he? He's the greatest. Okay. And so we talk a lot of horse racing. What is it about the sport where you can't wait to get to the track or to get on a broadcast to talk about a race?
Yeah, the big day. The big day vibe, the energy, the feeding off of, for example, on Saturday, the 48,000 at Belmont Park. I don't bet very often. I fell in love watching my father ride with the sport. I fell in love with watching him ride, and I fell in love with the game because covering the sport as a sport, the Breeders' Cup, the Triple Crown. And to me, there's nothing more exciting than waking up the day of a big race and walking into the racetrack, feeling that energy. And as the day continues to progress, you look around and you realize how many people there. Like, it's kind of quiet the first couple of races, Belmont Stakes Day. Then you get to the last, you know, to the Met Mile and the Manhattan, and the Belmont is next. You look around and it is absolutely jam-packed. It's an intense New York crowd. They sing New York, New York. It is absolutely electric, whether it's, you know, a Triple Crown or not. Of course, it's different when there's an American Pharoah becoming the first Triple Crown winner in 37 years, or watching Justify become a Triple Crown winner. But those are the days that remind you, you know, what the sport is supposed to be like, what it's like on the biggest of days. And when you have a story like Arcangelo, and watching the celebration, the genuine excitement for Javier Castellano, a moment he's been waiting and waiting for, and the instant reaction from Jenna Antonucci was absolutely priceless.
Your dad obviously was legendary, but who do you gravitate more toward now? Do you gravitate toward trying to get some information from riders, or do you try to get it from the trainers?
It really depends. The trainers, I think that when it comes to a strategy, when it comes to trying, you need that first-hand explanation. It's one thing to have a bunch of analysts suggest why they think, for example, maybe a horse didn't run very well in their last race. That's there. As experts, their theory, their hypothesis, very different having a trainer explain things. You know, well, hey, you know, maybe that horse threw a shoot. You didn't know about that. You know, maybe but it was attempted. There's so many different reasons, and that's what makes it tricky, because we can't talk to the athlete. If you can talk to a basketball player and he can tell you why he shot 2 for 29 the night before, right? With a horse, that's where you really need the trainer and that first-hand information. And for the riders, you know, you always want to ask them strategy. They don't always want to divulge that. They don't want to let the other riders know what they're going to go out there and do. But that's what you really want in a broadcast, that firsthand information and something that the viewer doesn't have access to himself.
Well, you're brilliant at conveying it, and I always love talking to you about it, and I appreciate the time you always give us. Thanks, Lafitte. Appreciate you.
Anytime. Thanks so much. Have a great one.
Lafitte Penkai. He texted me. He said he wants to stick around for your rant, and I was like, no.
Oh, my almighty!
He's welcome to.
No, it's all right. No, he's...
I got nothing on horse racing, but he's welcome to.
No, it's all right. But again, it was important to talk about. It's an issue. It's brought up. When something like that happens, it is a headline. It is awful. It is tragic. But the stats do back up that people may not believe it, but it's safer. And I'll tell you right now, jockeys, that's as dangerous a job as there is. Trying to get up on a powerful animal like that. I'll tell you, right, whenever I've been to the racetrack with Dick and we've gone down into the paddock area and other areas, because, you know, Dick doesn't just sit up in the box. We go around everywhere. We both keep our distance from the horses. Don't know you. Don't know what you can do and what your attitude is right now.
Sports talk where your voice counts. This is the Steve Jones Show on News Radio 1070 WKOK. Now from the Sunbury Motors Studio, here's Steve Jones.
Sunbury Motors, 4th Street in Sunbury. Sunbury Motors Kia, routes 11 and 15, Hummel's Wharf, and online at sunburymotors.com. You want great new inventory? They have it. Ford, Kia, Hyundai, with great warranties. The pre-owned inventory has the Sunbury Motors guarantee, so important to your buying experience. And a great service department to back it all up with pros for technicians, the best. All at Sunbury Motors, 4th Street in Sunbury, Sunbury Motors Kia, routes 11 and 15, Hummel's Wharf, and online at sunburymotors.com. If you're in the office, put your feet up right now. If you're at home, just kind of kick back and relax. If you're in the car, pull over to the side of the road because it's time now for the Matt Cotrello third rant of the day.
Well, as I always say, Steve, I can't ignore stupid. This is the definition of stupid. This reverse boycott tonight that Ace fans are doing. Listen, I get the frustration. The organization is an awful organization. It's awfully run. They have it's just been bad for a very long time, other than what, 2018, when they were in the playoffs. But this reverse boycott thing, it just doesn't make sense, because they're trying to fill the ballpark, but say sell on their T-shirts that they're apparently going to be giving away, and they've raised money for this. Do you understand where this money's going? The guy is still going to get your money, even though you're trying to boycott against him, a reverse boycott in this case. Plus, you're going to fill the stadium to, say, sell the team. I mean, do you hear yourselves? Well, I mean, it's a complete contradiction right off the bat. But either way, the bottom line is this guy is going to get their money for a point they're trying to make when he's already halfway out the door anyway, going to Las Vegas.
Well, for one thing, they're only getting like three, they're not getting a lot of fans to the game to begin with. And they just want to, they're going to do two things. They're going to show that there's support in Oakland to play baseball there. And two, they just want to show that they want them out. That's all fine. I mean, it's not going to make any difference whatsoever. Because it's really difficult when you lose a team. It's really difficult for a community when you lose a team. The fan bases, because we've seen it. I mean, Quebec would be a great NHL market. Not a good NHL market, a great NHL market. They'd sell out every game. They have a brand new arena. They have no team. They're playing in Colorado right now. Okay? They're playing in Colorado. Right? We all know the Whalers are playing down in Carolina. You know, we've seen other teams move before along the way. To the communities that lose the team, it is really tough. It is not something that's taken lightly. I mean, the Raiders are playing in Las Vegas now. The Chargers are playing up in Los Angeles. It's not easy. So you're trying to come up with different ways of sending your message and not showing up actually as a way of just telling everybody that you're justified by moving to Las Vegas. So they thought they'd come up with this. I mean, everybody's just desperate right now. They don't want to lose their team. And look at Oakland. Lost the Raiders. They're going to lose the A's. They lost the Warriors. All in a short period of time.
I don't know. Just, I get it. I guess I know they're in a tough spot, but I just whole thing, this is a waste of time and money. That's all.
Oh, it might be. Well, it is. It's both. Now, if you're a baseball fan, you just want to, hey, I'll take part. I'll wear the shirt, and I just want to go to a game. Yeah. Okay. So it's not a waste of time. In that regard, waste of money? Well, you know, I mean, how many more major league games you're going to get a chance to watch in Oakland anyway? They're actually playing well right now. I think at one point they won 6 in a row, right? Something like that.
They beat the Rays last night.
Yeah, playing. I mean, they've won 6 in a row. They're playing better. And look, they're just trying to come up with ways. It's, you know, it's hard for fans. They have so little say over what goes on with this stuff. They don't. I mean, what kind of say do they have in this? You know?
No, you're right. And the city, I think, has handled some things wrong to some extent as well. Because I only think it's going to hurt the city, not help the city in any way.
Well, I mean, you always have universities that will do these surveys about, you know, what's the impact of a franchise on a city? Hey, guys. Hey. The economic impact of a franchise in a city. Obviously there are restaurants and there are hotels and so forth. Yeah. Okay, I understand that. Plus, of course, you know, employing more people in baseball, you're employing them for 81 extra days. They go around as vendors or ticket takers, whatever they may be. Okay. Right. But there's a psychological part to it, and there's an image perception look at it. That when you have a team, there is a perception that you are a major league. And you can't put that down in any study. You can't put that down in hard data. Right? It's a perception. It's a feel. And for Oakland, now San Francisco has a lot of problems right now. Right? As we all know, San Francisco has a lot of problems. It's one of the more, San Francisco is one of the more beautiful cities I've ever visited. But right now they have some problems. Now the Warriors play there. The Giants play there, but they're not quite downtown, but, you know, they're there. And that ballpark's beautiful. All right. The hockey team is in San Jose. The football team is in Santa Clara. But Oakland's going to get the perception of not being major league any longer because everybody's left. Right? And that's going to be something that it does affect a city. Right? I mean, Hartford's not a big city. It's only about 110,000, 120,000 in population. Well, when they lost the Whalers, they lost that perception. And suddenly, out of nowhere, they're more like Providence. It's not. It's different. It's different. You know, well, you've got the name of your city out there all the time. All the time. And you notice the Florida Marlins changed their name to the Miami Marlins. And it gets the name of the city out there all the time. It's like that advertisement. It's like the front porch of the city. It's not the city. It's not what makes it run or anything like that. But it's the front porch where people get to see the name and they get to see, right, all the time on TV. I mean, no offense, they don't fly a blimp over the Chase Bank building. It may fly by and on its way to a sporting event, but they don't fly it over the Chase Bank building, even though Chase Bank is over there doing billions and billions of dollars of business. But it's the perception of Major League that a sports franchise brings to a city that you can't really put a price on. And do you end up attracting conventions? Do you end up attracting maybe a little more business because of that? Look at Columbus, for example. Yeah, they got Ohio State. Now they have the Blue Jackets. Yeah, but Jack Nicklaus plays his tournament every year in Dublin. And you should see everything around Columbus right now and all the events they get. My goodness, they got the President's Cup one year. Really? It's because they have Jack Nicklaus and they have a golf course. Okay. And the entire world, you know, I'm talking about players from around the world and the media around the world come in and visit it. So there's a perception that goes with it that just can't be related to in data, which happens to be in everything in life. We have data. Good for you, okay? Do you have a feel for what we're seeing here? Can you interpret the data, but with a feel for what we're looking at here? If you can't, I don't really care about your data. I don't. It's like analytics. Yeah? Mike Trout has a war number. Oh, well, I got it. Here's one. If Mike Trout isn't playing, the backup isn't as good. We're all set. Thank you. Appreciate your time. You poured over all this data? I mean, I got two eyes. I know the other guys aren't as good. We're good. Like, there's a big story in the Boston papers today about Trevor Story working out. Kike Hernandez leads the league in errors at shortstop. Gee, do you think Story might be an upgrade over here in the back? Okay. Don't need any data. Can see it for myself. Oh, goodness gracious. So, Calvin Booth, I mentioned it was a bittersweet night, so it was great to see Lisa Salters, Lady Lion basketball player, on stage, did a brilliant job in the postgame last night. And Calvin Booth. Calvin Booth comes to Penn State. Calvin's dad passed away in 2020. And the running joke that we have whenever we talk, and the last time I sat down and talked to Calvin was, I think it was the end of February. And he was back to visit. He was in Columbus. He was back to visit his mother in Reynoldsburg. And I came over to shoot around. And I sat there and talked to him. And the running joke we always have is, so how's the job? And his answer is always the same. Steve, I got 1-5. I'm good. And 1-5 is Jokic, by the way, who wears 15. Calvin comes to Penn State, quiet as quiet gets. His dad, I think this was at the corner room, sits down with Bruce Parkhill. And the lead recruiter, by the way, was Ed DeCellis. Ed was an assistant on Bruce's staff at the time. And Ed worked really hard to convince Calvin to come to Penn State. So they sit down at the corner room, and father says to him, he says, Calvin, he says, you got anything you want to say? He says, no. The father looks over and says, what we talked about this morning? He goes, oh. He says, tell him what you told me this morning. He says, oh, okay. Yeah, I'm coming to Penn State. That's how he broke the news. Because he's just not a talker. Now he's he talks a lot more. But he redshirted his first year with Bruce. It was Bruce's last year as the head coach. And Calvin redshirted. And I remember going in and watching him just on my own practice. And I said to Bruce, I said, And I said, boy, for a big man, I said, I know he needs to put more weight on. I said, I got that. But he looks like he has some real skills to him. He says, oh, yeah, no, he's going to be good. And the first game they play, when he finally gets a chance to play as a redshirt freshman, now Jerry Dunn's the head coach, was against, I think it was Morgan State. And he, I think, blocked like 7 or 8 shots in the game. Like, holy mackerel, this guy's going to be. Well, he did. He blocked shots left and right, where he set records in the Big Ten. And at the senior banquet, they played a tape that was like a 2-minute tape. And the entire time, it's just me saying, block by Booth, block by Booth, Booth blocked it, block by Booth. It got to be comical. But then Calvin became a really good offensive player as time went. He ended up being the 35th overall pick in the draft, going to the Washington Wizards, which is 6 spots higher than Nikola Jokic, Jokic was drafted. Right? And he has what's called a journeyman career. He goes 10 years in the NBA. Journeyman career. And I have, as you know, I've had tremendous respect for the ability of players to keep their careers alive. You know, he played with Washington, Seattle, Dallas. He played all over the place. But he played 10 years. But when he got out, he got into scouting. And then he got to the Timberwolves. And, you know, he gets there and he's, you know, we come to town, Penn State comes to town, and the T-Wolves are home and they're playing Detroit. It was, hey, you want to, Calvin got us a box and we sat in the box with him for a game. And, but at that point, he was working his way up. He went from scouting to personnel director to assistant general manager. And then he had the opportunity to go to Denver and be the assistant general manager to Tim Connelly. And again, he's still out there on the road all the time looking at personnel. And then Tim Connelly got this great opportunity to be the vice president and general manager of the T-Wolves. He goes and Calvin gets moved up. In fact, I think we had Calvin on the show when they were in the bubble. Well, he becomes the GM, and they make a critical decision. They've got Jokic, and they've got Murray. You know, and Conley drafted both. He drafted Jokic in the second round. He drafted Murray 7th overall. Right? Then they, and then he drafted, Conley drafted Porter, and they made the trade for Gordon. But they've got a decision to make here. They got to the Western Conference Final in the bubble. Remember, we had Calvin on the show talking about that. And they missed by 2 games of getting to the finals. But like something felt like it was missing. And there was a lot of talk that maybe they would go after Kyrie Irving. Get that third guy. And Calvin, along with Michael Malone, they made the decision, like, we've got Jokic and we've got Murray. We can put key parts around them and it'll be, and we can make it work. And Calvin really made it work in the past year. He's the guy that drafted Christian Brown from Kansas. Brown was a part of 3 state championship teams in Kansas. He played all 40 minutes in the championship game against North Carolina when they won the national title. And Calvin drafted him in the first round because Calvin is very much like Michael Malone. They both believe in wing guys, but not the way you think. Everybody thinks, oh, yeah, wing guys, interchangeable parts, offense, offense, offense. Nope. They believe in strong wing defenders. Okay? And Brown gave them that. Then they go to free agency. You know, and he picked up Caldwell Pope because it felt Caldwell Pope brought a tenacity and at least a championship pedigree because he was part of that Lakers team in the bubble that won. And in free agency, they got Bruce Brown. But they didn't get Bruce Brown in the first day. That's when the high-priced guys go. And Calvin Booth did not have Bruce Brown on the high-priced list, leaving the Nets. He had him on the secondary list. Well, day 2 comes up. He's still there. And Calvin's got him on his second-day list, and it turns out he's the second. And they were surprised. They thought Brown would go first day. But they were surprised, and they signed him. And they got him back to his natural spot playing guard because they had him playing the 3 and the wing and things like that in Brooklyn. That's not him. And they got him into the spot that made it fit. And they stuck with their plan. They didn't dismantle the team. And Calvin was brilliant with the acquisitions he made. Pope gave them a tenacity and a toughness. Brown gave them another guard that can come in and make plays like he was able. You know, he's not going to be Murray. He doesn't have to be. And Christian Brown gave them so much off the bench. And Calvin made all those moves. And I'm thrilled for him. Thrilled for him. He's just, obviously when he was playing, I rarely saw him. Since he stopped playing, I've seen or talked to him a lot. And I'm thrilled beyond words for him. And it's great to see he's getting the credit he deserves. And Michael Malone should get a lot of credit. Great team. And Jokic? Jokic is interesting. It is a league that features a lot of flash and dash all over the place. You look at guys like... Let's pick out of Trae Young, John Wall, Ja Morant. They are spectacular players. But let's be honest about it. Except for a rare occasion here or there, do they make anybody around them better? Their individual games are great, but do they make people around them better? And ask yourself, how many championships are those three combined for? None. Jokic makes everybody around him better. Every. Great passer, rebounder, the whole thing. I mean, can get his own shot. Soft touch. He makes everybody around him better. Jokic, you have great athletes that play sports. And then you have certain people that are made for a sport. Danny Ainge was a great athlete. He was a starting third baseman for the Toronto Blue Jays, starting guard for the NBA champion Boston Celtics. Great athlete playing basketball. Larry Bird was a basketball player. Nikola Jokic is a basketball player. And how many times have you heard me mention Murray's name on this show this past year? I don't know. 20, 30, 35 times?
Yeah, definitely
times?
Quite a lot.
Right. Why? Okay. Because guess what? He's missed the playoffs the last 2 years, and it's hurt Denver. And when I watched him play, I thought, this guy is a big-time player who makes big-time plays, and he does it within a team concept. Love watching Murray play. And now they both have rings. All right, we'll come back with more in a moment here on News Radio 1070 WKOK.